For this is the law and the prophets. Let's just let that one sink in for a minute. We're going to read it again. Known as the golden rule. Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. Very profound verse. I want you to take a look at some traffic signs we have up here on the screen. And in case you don't know, the upside down triangle is a yield sign, and the sideways square there is a caution sign. I want you to just look at these for a moment. There's one, they all have different shapes and sizes, but there's one has a command that's completely opposite from everything else. And I want you to just make a mental note of which one that is. It's a little quiz for the day. See if your thinking is working operational right now. So, just give you a second. Major mental note. Little hint. It's going to be the reaction for your foot. What is your foot going to do in reaction to these signs? One of them is completely unique. Okay. If you put the green light, you are correct. The green light will tell you to go. Everything else tells you to put your foot on the brake in some way or slow down. This is telling you to speed up. And that's something that is completely unique. And that's kind of the context we want to look at with what Jesus said with the golden rule. There were actually, in ancient Near Eastern and world religions, there were other forms of the golden rule. For example, Confucius said it this way. He says, what you do not want done to yourself, do not do to others. The Greek philosophers, Stoics, Epicureans, and others, but this statement's from Stoicism, but it's still very similar to the Epicurean statement. What you avoid suffering yourselves, seek not to inflict on others. The Buddhist had something somewhat similar. Put yourself in the place of others. Kill not, nor cause to kill. The Judaism, Rabbi Hillel specifically made this statement, but this is typical for Jewish thinking. What is hateful to yourself, do not do to others. But Jesus' teaching is unique. He's saying, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. What he's saying is different than all the other teachers, because all the other teachers focused on avoiding the negative, but Jesus taught proactive, positive action. There's a huge difference, and we're going to dissect this a little bit more as we move on. This has been called by experts in ethics the pinnacle of ethics. No one's ever topped this statement of what ethics is really all about. It is the summation also of the entire biblical perspective, all biblical instruction. In fact, if we read some of these summation kinds of statements in the Bible, there's another one, the Great Commandment. Jesus said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. That's another one of those kind of summation statements based on love. Galatians 5, Paul says it this way. He says, through love, serve one another, for the law is fulfilled in one word, even this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So these are kind of summation statements. Well, the golden rule is another one of these summation statements. Treat others as you would have them treat you, or do to others as you would have them do unto you. The golden rule is completely unique because it requires action. Most laws, if you look at them, are in the negative. There are a few that are in the positive, but most of them are in the negative. You shall not kill. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witnesses. You shall not commit adultery. But what Jesus is saying goes completely different than that. He's saying, I want you to take action. Instead of not killing, I want you to do good to that person. I want you to pray for that person. Instead of not stealing, we are to be generous in giving and enriching the lives of other people. See, this is a completely, radically different concept. Virtually anybody can refrain from doing something wrong, but to do what is right, that's far above and beyond anything that any of the other philosophers or teachers ever taught. And what's more, as we look at this, the word in the Greek, when it says do, the word do in the Greek, poieo, means do, act, or perform, is actually written in the continuous. It's continuous. It's written in the present active imperative. And we talked about this a little bit last week, what the active means. Imperative is a command. So it's a command, but it's in the present active, meaning that it is to be something that happens continuously. And as we talked about last week, there's an aorist in the Greek, which means something that's done once. It's a punctiliar action. This is not punctiliar, it's continuous. Keep on doing good. Continuously be in a lifestyle of doing good for other people. Not just refraining from doing bad, because anybody can refrain from doing bad. You ask people sometimes, well, why should God let you into heaven if you come before God in that day? And people say, well, I haven't killed anybody, I haven't done this, I haven't. That's nothing. Lots of people don't steal or don't cheat or don't lie or whatever. But have you done everything that you were called to do? That's the thing that begins to put us in our, bring us to a point of humility, realizing there is no way we've done everything, that all the good we could possibly have done. And that's why we have to have Jesus as our forgiver, as the one who stands in our place before God, because none of us has done enough good. We may have refrained from evil, some of us, but have we done all the good that we could? See, this is calling for continuous action. It is other-centered kind of love. And we've studied before here some of the different kinds of love that are spoken of in a biblical worldview. In the Greek language, there were four words for love. One was eros, from where we get erotic love, which is, you know, the chemistry thing. And then there's storge love, which is the family type love that husbands and wives and children have for each other in the family. And then there's phileo love, which is the love that friends have for one another, friendship kind of love. And then there's agape love, which is unconditional love that treats another person with kindness and love in spite of how they treat us. There is no, it's not dependent on reciprocation. That's a very important distinction. And this is what the kind of love that Jesus is talking about here. And it's also a servant mindset, where we consider ourselves servant. Jesus says, you know, I didn't come to serve, to be served, but to serve. I didn't come to have you take care of me. I came to serve you. And if this is the King of the universe, then He says, I want you to follow suit. I'm the King of the universe. I came here to serve you. Now I want you to serve each other. It's based on serving. And it is only possible through the Spirit. Anybody can refrain from doing the bad. But to do what is right and good and loving isn't a class all by itself. First of all, we need God's grace. We need to recognize God's forgiveness. When I stop and think of what my life was like, the trajectory of my life, that probably should have ended in my early 20s because of my lifestyle. I was hopelessly addicted, in a terrible mess. And then God had mercy on me even when I was rebellious and brought hope into my life. See, that's the thing that motivates me. When I see somebody who's suffering, someone who's going through a difficult time, someone who's caught up in a lifestyle that they can't seem to break free from, I remember God's mercy to me. It makes me want to extend mercy. The motivation comes from what God has done for us. And if you look at your life and how good and gracious God has been to you, that's the motivation to pass it along to somebody else. And then there has to be the power of the Spirit, because none of us, we can have all the good intentions in the world, but none of us can carry through consistently unless we have the Holy Spirit living in us. So each day we invite the Spirit to come in and live His life through us, and that's how we begin to fulfill this pinnacle of ethical wisdom, to do to others as we would have them do to us. We have to break out of our mindsets of what we need and to really be thinking other-centered, and that's a God thing. Only a person with a renewed heart can really operate in that capacity. That's what makes this so amazing. These words are profound. And so we stop and we look at the people around us and say, how can I serve this person? How can I love this person? How can I be sensitive to their needs? Because if without God, we can very easily become self-absorbed, like this little video clip we're going to take a look at. A little bit overplayed, but the point is well taken. We can very easily become so absorbed in what we think and what we want that we ignore the hearts of other people. And I bet if we were to just take a moment just to think, probably just in this last week, you can think of a time that you got caught up in something that was, you maybe were busy with what you were doing or whatever, and ignored some of the people around you that really mean something to you. I can think of an experience like that in my life this week. Just a family setting, where I wasn't proactive in loving. I was concerned about my schedule and my life and not paying attention. And we stop and think how much people matter to God and how easy it is to slip into self-centered thinking and self-centered ways of life. Let's just take a moment now to step into the marriage arena for a few minutes. For those of you who are married or those who plan to be married someday, to practice the golden rule within marriage takes an awareness of what's going on inside the heart of the other person. And we think differently. If you haven't figured that out yet, you will very soon. Men and women think differently. In fact, there's a book written by Willard Harley called His Needs, Her Needs. It's excellent on this. In fact, whenever I do premarital counseling with people, I'll usually encourage them to read this book. And he has done some studies on the way women react to things and the way men react and how what women value and what men value and what women's needs are and what men's needs are. And in order to practice the golden rule, we really have to step out of what we think we want into what the heart of the other person is. And that's hard to do sometimes. So he's listed these, his needs and her needs. And these aren't always true. Nobody fits completely into some graph. But about 75% of the time these things hold true. And you may find that they hold true in your relationships. Or you can at least discuss and decide which are the top needs in your relationship. But first of all, in his needs, most men are wired so that their primary love language, the primary way that they feel loved, is physical. It's physical intimacy, physical fulfillment, very demonstrative. That's how us men feel loved, generally. Women, on the other hand, tend to be much more interested in affection. The romantic thing, where you sit across the table and look in each other's eyes with a candle there. Tenderness, friendship, that's what's valued. So, if I, as a male, am not careful, and I'm wanting to practice the golden rule, I'll come home and attack my wife physically, and she's not really quite ready for that. She's not ready to be kissed on and hugged on. That's what I'd like. But that's not necessarily what is meaningful for her. It might be better to take her by the hand and go for a little walk and a talk and conversation and that kind of thing. Those are the things that she's going to value. So in order to be able to love my wife, I have to understand how she feels loved. How to practice the golden rule means I have to step out of what I want into the heart and the mind of the other person. Very important. Let's look at the second level. The second top need for men was recreational companionship. Men love to have a spouse that is excited about sports and recreation and getting involved in those types of activities. To sit down and actually watch a whole football game together kind of thing. Especially during the playoffs. On the other hand, the next to the top need, and this is a top need for some women, but is conversation. And it seems like a lot of times women are wanting conversation right in the same time that men are wanting recreational companionship. Right in the middle of the football game. Well, anyway, that's another point. Nice to talk about this with the playoffs going on, isn't it? But they've done studies and found that women, next to the top need, is conversation. Meaningful conversation. And they've studied and found out that women speak approximately, on the average, 25,000 words a day, and men 12,000 words a day. And what that means is, guys, we get home from work, and we've already spoken our 12,000 words. And they're just getting started. This was a problem. I can remember when we were first married, I'd come home and I would just be exhausted being around people all day, and I was done talking, and my wife would come up, How was your day? It's fine. Did you see this person? Yeah. Did you see that person? Yeah. Well, how'd that go? Fine. I just couldn't bring conversation out of me. And then I read this book about how women talk, love conversation, and how meaningful that is to them. And it said, if you're running into this problem, it's all ears, ask your wife how her day went. See, the reason my wife was asking me how my day went is because that's what she would like me to ask her when I get home, because that's what she wants to do. So I tried it. I came home and I said, how was your day today? Oh, her face lit up and she went off on a little conversation about all this stuff. And I got to just sit and quietly go, It worked great. And by the time she was done talking, then I was pretty well recouped enough to where I could enter into some conversation. It works. But it takes a little bit of wisdom to look into the heart of the other person and see what their needs are. And try to meet those needs. The third top need for a man is an attractive spouse. Women, when you do yourself up as best as you can and look as nice as you can for your husband, you know what that does? Makes him feel loved. Makes him feel important. It really does. When you try to take care of yourself, it makes him feel loved and important. On the other hand, women, their need is for honesty and openness. And so when you have conversation, if you can get to the feelings instead of just talking facts, and talk about what's really going on in your heart, talk about what your fears are, what your concerns are, that endears her, that makes her feel like she's your confidant. It makes her feel loved and important. A man has a tremendous need for domestic support. That means even though his wife may be working outside the home, if she makes the house as a nest as much as possible, for it feels like this is a place that he can withdraw to and it's a place of safety, that makes him feel loved. On the other hand, the woman needs financial support. Even though both spouses may be working, she needs to know that the husband's priorities are at home and isn't going to just go off and spend money indiscriminately, but it's going to make sure that there's an investment in the home. And when that money comes in, she feels loved. Men have a high need for respect and admiration. We need to know that our spouses respect us and admire us for what we do. So refraining from put-downs can be really helpful. And talking about the things that are appreciated, that builds a man's self-esteem and it also makes him feel loved. At the same time, when a man will take special attention to commit to the family, making sure family priorities are family priorities, making sure that there's enough time blocked off on the schedule for family time so that the spouse feels like family is a priority, then she feels loved. Very important to keep these things in mind. A wife will feel loved. One of the things that I've noticed with Paula, we'll do a thing called boys' night. I'll go home and get the boys and we'll go out to eat. We come back and invariably she'll be super sweet when we get back. I think, well, what's the deal? Well, it just says something to her to see me pour into the boys. It lets she feels the boys are an extension of who she is. So when I'm loving on the boys and doing something with them, it reinforces that family commitment feeling. And she feels loved. The neat thing about this is when we commit to one another for life, we have years and years and years to experiment on this. And we'll make some mistakes along the way. But as we practice the golden rule and we ask the Lord to bring us wisdom into these relationships, we can begin to enhance that love relationship as God would have us build it up. Now, there are also love languages that are in general, not just male-female, but we, with our friends, co-workers. In fact, Smalley and Trent did a study. And in this study, they discovered that there are basically five love languages that people operate under. We all hear love differently. We feel love differently. And while we're doing this, I hope that you'll just do a little mental note of some people that you know, or maybe in your own life, where your priority, how you tend to hear or feel loved, and how the people around you feel loved. The first love language is quality time. Some people only feel loved if there's quality time, and oftentimes conversations associated with this. And you can say nice things to them, you send them gifts, you can do all kinds of other things, but they're not going to hear it, they're not going to feel loved unless there's quality time. Let's take a look at this next little sketch.
What you staring at?
You.
Why are you staring at me?
Wondering.
Wondering what?
Wondering what you doing?
Reading.
Reading what?
A box of cereal.
Oh.
Now what are you staring at?
You again.
What you staring at me for?
Wondering.
What are you wondering now?
Wondering what it says.
Oh.
Well?
Well what?
Well, what's it say?
It says that little sisters ought to let big sisters read cereal boxes in peace. And not ask 1.5 million questions every 2 seconds. Otherwise, they run the very great risk of being pummeled into a great pile of icky, gooey pulp.
Oh. What's pulp?
Would you just get out, please? Oh, come on! Hi, Mom.
Jamie.
How's it going?
Hmm?
I said, how's it going?
Oh, fine. Just fine.
Hey, Mom.
Hmm?
I was just wondering.
Wondering what?
I was just wondering if maybe you could take Tiffany...
Jamie. After a very long, hard day of work, I just need a few minutes uninterrupted to read the newspaper. Is that too much to ask? Is it?
I don't know. I guess I know how it feels to be Danielle.
Some people's love language was getting bypassed. Some people need quality time, some meaningful conversation. Our oldest son's that way. That's his thing. And many times, he will ask some question, sometimes just to get a debate going. Loves to talk and even argue about stuff. Not in a fighting kind of way. Just let's... I'll take this side, you take that side, let's debate. Why? Because it gets that face-to-face thing going, conversation taking place. That's how he feels loved. Meaningful conversations, important to Paul as well. All of us need it, we all need it, but there's some that's the primary love language. And so if we're going to love, if I'm going to love that son, I've got to figure out ways to take that time. Now the second of those love languages is physical touch. And some people are going to hear love or feel loved primarily through physical touch. Now our second son is the physical touch boy. When he was little, he would just always want to be held, constantly wanted to be held. Now today, that physical touch has moved into wrestling and tussling. There has to be some kind of physical contact there. And we can engage conversation, and that conversation works well, but he can be perfectly at peace driving along in a car and not saying a word. But he needs that appropriate physical touch. Maybe you know some people that need physical touch. And this can be done in appropriate ways, even across gender. As long as it could be a touch on the shoulder, a touch on the arm. There are ways in which communication can take place, love can be expressed in the way that a person understands. Maybe you know some people, maybe you're one of those people that physical touch is your primary love language. Then there's the love language of acts of service. The way you can usually tell if someone has a love language of acts of service is somebody who's always serving. Baking bread, doing nice little things for people, bringing meals. And some people are not going to hear love unless you do some kind of act of service. Now, this is a primary one for Paula. And I am mechanically challenged when it comes to fixing things. So I haven't been able to serve in that way, but I can help in some other things. Because she's not going to really hear love unless there's meaningful conversation or some kind of acts of service. Maybe you know some people, maybe you're a person that when somebody does something to serve you, that's when you just feel warm all over. You know that you're loved. Another one is words of affirmation, compliments. Sometimes meaningful conversation is fine. Sometimes a touch is fine. Sometimes an act of service is fine. But some of us, I'm one of those, if somebody says, you know, you did really well with that, I'll hang on to that. And it goes a long ways. And you can oftentimes see people with this language because they're the ones that like to send little cards. They like to give compliments. Some people just feel loved when somebody says something that affirms them. And then there's the final one, receiving or giving gifts. Some people don't feel loved unless there's a gift involved. We have some friends. And they both have this love language. And as soon as they get paid, they're off to the store buying some little something for each other. And they have more knickknacks around their house than you can possibly imagine. And there's always sending flowers and things like this back and forth and little, you know, chocolates and all that stuff. Now, chocolates work for just about anybody, I think, but flowers, it's really interesting. Paula is really, you know, I've gotten her flowers before, and she goes, oh, those are nice. Put them in a vase, and that's where they sit. I mean, she appreciates it, but that isn't her primary love language. But the couple that I just mentioned, I mean, if they have flowers, I mean, they're just right in front of them on their desk, and oh, isn't this wonderful, and what a wonderful... It's just how people are wired. Maybe giving and receiving gifts is your primary love language. The point of the matter is that if students of our spouses, students of our friendships, students of the people we work with, constantly asking God to give us insight into how we can love the way He loved us. How can we get out of ourselves into the hearts of somebody else and able to love? And that's kind of the assignment for this week. First of all, I'd like to encourage you to do some research. Research the love languages of your family, friends, and coworkers. Jot them down. What are the ways in which they are going to hear and feel love? Write those down. Secondly, pray for an opportunity to express kindness this week. And express kindness. Act it out as soon as possible. I'd like you to just take this as an experiment this week. Do the research, pray for an opportunity, and act it out and see what God does. Francis of Assisi lived many centuries ago. He was a son of a very wealthy man. They had servants catering to every need. Service was completely outside of their family vocabulary. But as he began to read and study the life of Jesus, and such things as the Golden Rule, he realized that he was not living the life of Jesus. And he was overwhelmed with this sense of failure in that area. And one day he walked into the courtroom where his father worked, took his gorgeous, rich robe off and handed it to his dad. And he says, I'm walking in the footsteps of Jesus. And he went out and began to live a life based on serving other people. To serve others. To love others. Later on, there were some others that got caught up in his way of life. We know them today as the Franciscans. Begin to live his life for other people. Among some of the things that he wrote a prayer. And it's a prayer that's really based on the Golden Rule. It's a prayer that has tremendous meaning because it focuses on this whole need to be able to receive love from God and then give it away. And I'd like to invite you to read it with me. I'm going to pray this prayer and then we're going to sing a song as the praise team comes up. But let's just pray this prayer together, shall we, as we read it here. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. O Divine Master, grant that I might not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is giving that we receive. It is in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is in dying that we are born to eternal life.